I read in the show business paper that a group of dancers needed to go out and work. I don't remember if it was the Lowy's circuit or the Keith circuit. And so I went down, and the guy directing it and choreographer said, "Hi, Al." I said, "Gee, I didn't know you were a dancer." In those days, we call it a hoofer. Anyway, he said, "I didn't know you were a hoofer." I said, "Well, I mean, I wouldn't embarrass myself if I wasn't, you know." He's okay. "Well, we leave Wednesday." "Great, you know, okay, you got the job." Well, I wasn't a hooper. I called up a man who I considered the greatest dancer I ever saw in my life, John W. Bubbles, and I told him the problem, and he said, "Let's meet in the studio. I'll teach you three or four time steps." Taught me three or four time steps. I went out Wednesday, and I was a hoofer.
That was it.
Well, you hoof for us today here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're dancing on the radio.
Show off your acrobatic skills.
That's right. We will, of course, make note of the fact that you write for High Times. Right. Yeah, I suggested that I dance on the radio. Well, that's very appropriate. And
I figured I had it.
Yeah, we've got the general from High Times.
F-O-C-A-D-E, right? We'll make note of the fact.
Like Soul Train here, you know.
Right.
X-Ray
right.
Burns, and we're talking about Grandpa.
No, I mean, that's what I did. And when I was a clown, I always had an ambition not to be part of the mob. So it's very, very difficult to get a solo spot as a clown. Very difficult. Now it's almost impossible. And I worked for many years, and I must have discarded 8 million ideas. And finally, I worked up a thing with one of our midget clowns, and I got a solo spot. But that's, you know, work, hard work, inspiration, drive, desire, passion for what you do, you know.
Yeah.
And then I said, that wasn't enough. I think I can do a lot of comic things on a slack wire. So I had to teach myself how to work a slack wire. I had never been on the slack wire.
But you did.
You fall, you know. You do it, and that's it. No big deal.
But do you wish you never became Grandpa, and you could go back to the circus? Like, you know, more or less you are stereotyped. Would you say you are?
Am I stereotyped?
Yeah.
No.
I don't think
Grandpa,
so.
No. You know? Typecast?
I don't think
no,
he's so
the
much
last role I did in a movie, I played a mafia gangster. That's far from Grandpa.
What movie was that?
I just did a picture called Married to the Mob.
Uh-huh.
And the John, young hot director, John Demme, Danny,
yeah,
whatever his name
right.
is.
Right.
And just last Thursday and Friday, I did a music video related to that with some lady who was obviously very famous. I didn't know her.
That
Blondie,
lady with the
Debbie Harry.
Money,
right.
Huh?
Debbie Harry, Blondie,
right.
Yeah.
And she sang the song, and it's in the picture, and blah, 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 you know. So
I don't think it's
before
so much
that, I played certainly not a kindly old man, his grandpa. I did a picture called Bum
the
Rap.
Kindly old man.
which hasn't been released. And before that, I did a Disney film in Texas with, I always forget, the other half of Laverne and Shirley. Mention the two ladies.
Penny Marshall.
No,
Cindy
the
Williams.
Other lady.
Cindy Williams.
Right, right.
I used to hang out with
so,
Belushi.
So I don't consider myself typecast as Grandpa.
No, I don't think you're stereotyped or typecast as Grandpa. I just think you're recognized by a lot of people.
Oh, no question
it,
about
that.
But
where
I'll tell you what's happening.
Comes in.
Since Car 54 went back on the air.
A lot of people do say it was
Leo. Hey,
stuff.
Leo.
Yeah.
Schnauzer. I would say that out of in New York, let's see what the percentage is now, maybe 2 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
Before, it would be 10 out of 10.
Oh, yeah,
Grandpa.
Definitely.
Yeah. Hey, Leo! So it's, you know, it's like the last thing you saw.
Yeah,
okay.
Well, there's no question. I mean, I didn't do it, but it's been shown for 23 years. Obviously, you know, the impression, the indelibility.
Can you do a Grandpa Dungeon laugh for us, like you were making up a potion? 22 years, I guess, is a long time for that. I played for you. I have it.
It'll go off the chart. It'll go off the chart. The decibel is too high.
Okay.
You're not geared for that. Yeah. And you've got earphones on.
Oh, yeah. I'm protecting myself.
Boy, it'll take you right out.
Might strike.
That's it. Cool.
That's the coolest thing that ever happened to me.
Forget about Johnson.
It'll take you right out.
That's it.
I mean, forget about Hard Times.
See,
that's Hard Times
ratings
right there.
Now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now we're happening.
Yeah. Have you noticed that the odor in the studio is changing? You haven't noticed that, have you?
I
just wondered.
I've noticed.
I'm making a newsworthy note about it. And,
Oh, whoa. Starting to move.
Intelligent questions. What do you think of the plane that was shot down? That's intelligent, isn't it? Huh?
Boy.
It's current. Current events.
That's very current.
Gosh. Scary.
That's hot and current. What do I think? Are we going to go into politics? I don't mind.
No, I mean, I just threw that in because you were looking for intelligent questions.
So we find more cigars.
You can go for politics if
nobody,
you like.
Nobody used the word a dastardly thing. You know, use an old Charles Dickens word. I like that word. A dastardly thing. Obviously a tragedy. I
mean, yeah.
In spite of all the regrets, my own personal opinion is, and I know you ain't gonna love me for it, kiddies. I don't think they belong where they are. I personally don't think so. I said the same thing. I don't think they belong in Lebanon. I mean, nobody talks about those 200-odd Marines that got killed needlessly.
Yeah.
And absolutely for no... Can you say friggin'?
Yeah.
Is that permissible?
You can say that one, I guess.
Friggin' reason. None. Nobody questions that. By a man who, by the way, I have to inform you people, was the president of my union.
I know, that's where the residual question came from.
He was as stupid then, as backward then.
It's a lot different than I thought.
And I don't believe in, like, well, you have to, or you can't say anything because he's the president of the United States.
Oh, I don't go for that either.
I respect the office, but I don't respect the man.
Right.
Nobody talks about what were those guys doing there.
Yeah.
I mean, they were patsies. They were duck pins in a bowling alley. And nobody calls him to account for that. Or anybody.
Right.
Or anybody. I mean, they're forgotten. They are dead and forgotten. And that's tragic.
Yeah, just a front page.
But again,
the
I will say, you know, like that SOB H.L. Mencken said, nobody ever went broke underestimating the intelligence of the American people.
You sound like W.C. Fields there for a second.
Yeah. William Claude. I worked with him.
Did you?
Yeah,
that
in Fordham. He was a juggler.
Really?
Yeah. And in spite of
juggle?
In spite of the myth, he wasn't the world's greatest juggler. Uh-huh. But he was a good juggler. He was a good juggler.
They say he fell down a ladder once without spilling a drop of his martini.
Well, oh,
true story.
We have to identify the fact that the fellow from the High Times didn't say that. The other guy did.
Yeah, X-ray burns. The general's not saying too much.
To smell that thing from before.
It's the guy in the yellow shirt and the guy in the green shirt.
Right.
Yeah.
No,
right.
He was a good juggler.
And the guest of honor is the man in the little blue and white stripes.
Right. He was a good juggler.
Yeah.
But he wasn't the world's greatest juggler. The world's greatest juggler who ever lived was Francis Brunt. And that's unquestionable. No question about that. So he was a good juggler. And he did a silent bit. You know, he was.
I
knew Bill. In spite of what people say, he never, of course, it would be obvious. Can't have a juggler who drinks, obviously. I mean, that's a heck of an act, you know. I mean, you can get killed. He never drank. He considered himself, because facially what he looked like, he was a man who was terribly pockmarked,
mm-hmm.
and he had that tremendous, you know, electric light bulb of the nose, which was pockmarked. He never drank. He carried with him a suitcase full of whiskey, which he never drank, but used it as a social instrument to, hey, come on, fellas, come in my dressing room, have a drink. Because he considered himself a social outcast.
So he never was a drinker, though?
No, only until the end of his years, when he became very, his marriage went completely kaboom.
Right.
Hollywood stood on his neck and would not allow him to do, I would say, pretty much he died a broken man.
Yeah, like a lot of guys.
Much like Jones, a couple of weeks ago, yeah.
Besides on that, but He didn't have the business acumen that Charlie Chaplin had, who was a genius and who was able to say to the bosses, are you allowed to say screw you?
Sure.
You can say, okay. Screw you. You have to understand, in the 20s, with no income tax, Charlie, working for Hal Roach, was making $10,000 a week. That's unbelievable amounts of money. Yeah. I mean, you could get in the best restaurant in New York, Lou Chow's on 14th Street, I mean, a 10-course dinner for $3.75. He and his half-brother said, we're not going to work for you guys for $10,000 a week. We're going to make our own movies. And that's what Charlie did.
Yeah.
In addition to being a comic genius, he was a business genius. While other quote-unquote so-called geniuses, like Buster Keaton, who I knew, who was unquestionably extremely talented, and Fields, never that part of them did not exist. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't, in a devastating machine like Hollywood, you'll get ground down into doing potato chip commercials.
Yeah.
Alka-Seltzer, you know, I mean, that's...
Like Ringo Starr.
Like a lot of people.
Didn't Charlie Chaplin, he was a genius, it was a woman that done him in. Didn't he get into some trouble with an underage lady that caused his career to...
Not really. His career never was hurt by that. Mostly he was... He never became a United States citizen. He always remained a British citizen.
Right.
Chaplin initially was hated by the powers that be, and we can name them, of course, you know, Louis B. Mayer, who ran Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, Harry Kahn, who ran Columbia, Jack Warner and his brother, who ran Warner Brothers. In a milder sense, Sam Goldenrohr. Sam remained a friend. Carl Laemmle at Universal. The reason that they disliked him were not for political reasons. As they said, he was a commie, pinko, radical, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
He was not. It was because he wouldn't cut them in on the pie.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy who had his own studio,
right,
made his own pictures, in those days would gross $50, $60 million, of which they would get...
Yeah.
That was it. And they said, what's going on here? What happens if our other stars do this, you know? The rag merchants are out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And they got really scared when the three biggest draws in the business, Douglas Fairbanks, Sr.,
mm-hmm,
who had talent, Mary Pickford, who was the queen of the movies, and Charlie Chaplin,
mm-hmm,
formed a movie company. They were frightened to death. And the people who control the studios, the big banks back east,
mm-hmm,
what's going on?
Yeah.
We're not getting any of this. So when they found an opening, whether it was because of the fact that he loved the ladies or he made a political speech or something,
yeah,
and so they... He left of his own volition. They hounded him out of the country. He originally, and then he first went to England, and then he resided in Switzerland. That's where he lived. But he was a tough son of a... He was independent, ornery. He was a genius.
Yeah, anything I've read about him, he seemed a little ornery.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, the woman he married, though, was how old? 14, 15?
No. Now you're succumbing to all that propaganda, young man. He was exactly three times her age. He was 54, she was 18.
Okay.
She was the daughter of probably America's most prolific playwright, Eugene O'Neill. He married Una O'Neill. And they remained married right till his death and had a whole bunch of kids. He was three times her age. He was 54 when they married, and they stayed married almost 40 years. He was 91 or something.
Wow.
He died, you know. Yeah, and
sounds reasonable to me.
Did you ever see the movie The Front? Woody Allen starred in it. It was about the Red Scare.
The Blacklist. And, did
yes.
I see it?
Yes.
No,
okay.
I'm probably the most culturally deprived person in America. I think the last movie I saw was when Mike Todd, in 1957, invited me to see Around the World in 80 Days.
Nice.
So I don't see, yeah. I didn't see that.
Well, the lead into the question, though, is what was the blacklisting like in Hollywood? Was it, as, it seemed pretty horrible in the movie, actually.
It was devastating.
Yeah.
It was, you could run it down from people who committed suicide.
Yeah, that's... seems to be the basis of it.
And other people who became, in the parlance, the street words, rats, finks. It ruined careers. It was a devastating period in American culture.
Did you ever come close to being assaulted by those folks?
Me?
Yeah.
No, as far as I know, I wasn't ever blacklisted. Right. I knew... dozens of people who were friends of mine in radio,
right.
Or in the movies, or writers who I knew, and they were devastated by it. Absolutely.
Some of the people on the on Senator McCarthy's staff turned out to be shadier than a lot of the people that they
That's
were.
That's always the case.
Yeah, well, you got Roy Cohn,
who will investigate the man who investigates me. I mean,
right.
That's the old political satire song. You know, who will investigate the man who investigates me? It's always that's true. It was a shameful period. To me, it was a shameful. And nobody really questioned. Again, getting back to that SOBHO man. God, Mark.
My sentiments.
Nobody really questions, you know. Who raised really the question? What are all those Marines doing in Lebanon?
That's what the New York Post is there for.
You know. I mean,
raise questions?
Yeah. A question while somebody registers at a hotel with a girl who's not his wife. I mean,
right.
Who really cares?
Yeah.
I mean, who cares?
The wife.
I don't even think the white
paper sold,
but that's American keyhole mentality.
Did you really get to drive the car? Those little cars, the race cars I had in Monsters?
We had the Dragular.
Right, you got to drive that?
I'll tell you about the devastating experience that I had when I drove it the first time. The first car, of course, was the family coach, you know, the big car.
Right.
And the same gentleman, of course, built both cars and built the Batmobile and the car and my mother the car and the VW Winder car. One of the oldest and probably first customizers in the movie business, George Barris.
Right.
And the first time we used the Dragula, we were shooting on the back lot at Universal. And they said, okay, Al, you get in the car and you'll drive it down past this here spot. Well, I got into the car. We were shooting up in the hills. And the first time we used it, that is, you didn't see it, but it had a bubble top. Plastic. After I got in, they put on top of it. Except that this man who built the car, who was a nice man, but very penurious. And so he put no floorboards into the car. I drove about 10 feet, and all the dirt and dust came right up, outside of choking to death. It filled the entire bubble. I mean, I was in a Sahara windstorm.
Yeah.
I never went the distance that they wanted me to. I threw the damn bubble top over and used every four-letter word imaginable.
I've heard it before.
And I wouldn't get back into the car until they had some makeshift pine boards put down.
I, rather than the Dracula, my favorite vehicle was the flying kitty car
that
Herman
that
and yourself
built
for
you.
After we destroyed
And try as they might, those zany monster women couldn't figure out what you were doing out there in that garage.
Right.
Those are some pretty nice zany women on the show.
Yeah.
Lily had a complexion not entirely unlike your own, Glenn. A little bit pinker.
How about a cigarette?
Only have one. It's
somebody
mine.
Out there, give me a cigarette.
You want a cigar?
Yeah,
I'll take a cigar.
Have a cigar.
Yeah, we need some cigars. And cheap beer.
This is an honor. A grandpa cigar.
Wow.
Individual package.
These are the same type that I worked, that I smoked on the Munch.
Are they?
I'm honored.
Yeah.
Wow. Cheroots.
Right. That's right. Who said that?
Cheroots. That's me.
Yeah. By the way,
there's a wide range of knowledge of tobacco products.
Let's not go into that subject. We want to remain on the air. I mean,
minty cigars here.
Well, glad you got any tunes or anything here.
Oh, you want to play tunes and not talk to Grandpa?
I was going
to
get some water.
At all? Have you ever get together and have like a Munsters like dinner?
Well, we did. No, not a dinner. We did.
Get together and
Out of the Munsters, we did a movie for movies. We did an Easter special at Marineland, ran about an hour and a half. We did a another movie for television. That's about it. And we did a record.
Yeah, the record is over here.
We have it.
Okay.
For the record. That's, I think that's about the extent of...
Never any social gatherings, though? We all just got together somewhere?
We're separated. Oh, well, I did the 2 weeks ago, or 2 or 3 weeks ago, when I was down in Atlanta, we did a Munster retrospective that will be shown on WTBS the Sunday of the Labor Day weekend. Excuse me. And we brought in Pat Priest and Butch Patrick. And they were in the show. As far as socially, we're separated by so many miles. Yvonne DiCarlo lives in San Ynez Valley in California. Butch lives in Austin, Texas. I presently live in New York. Fred lives in New York. The young lady whose name I'm not going to give you, who played Marilyn, lives in New York. Pat Priest lives in Sun Valley, Idaho. So it's pretty hard to get together for a Sunday dinner. Yeah, we're separated.
Are any of them active still in show business besides Fred Gwynne?
Oh, he's
Yvonne DiCarlo pops up every now and then.
DiCarlo pops up here and there. Somebody just told me they saw her in a movie last week or something. Uh-huh. I mean, a TV movie, not one of her old Salome and Seven Veil Dance movies.
I never figured out how she made it onto the Munsters. She was like a love goddess of her times, and she was turned into like a dead woman who uses a coffin as a telephone. It was pretty cool.
I'm sure she felt that way.
Yeah.
She felt
Did she
that
play
way.
The harp for real or what?
She?
Yeah.
No.
That was just fake. I was convinced that she was really playing the harp on that one.
We're not going to spend an hour on your gullibility, young man. I mean, let's talk about something positive.
Next you'll be telling us that dragon under the stairs was fake, too.
No, that was real.
Okay.
That was real. That was real.
How did you keep the name Grandpa? I mean, I know a lot of times if you star as a character, years later you'll have problems with the, you know, the production company and whatnot.
You can't...
The Lone Ranger,
that's a word you can't copyright. Grandpa? It's impossible.
Yeah,
it's
that's true.
No.
But you're a grandpa. And you're
we can go through this subject matter about... First of all, I have two experiences about who owns what. About 2 years after the show went off the air, so that would be about 20, 21 years ago, the big... liquor company in Canada. It's owned by the Bronfman family. Seagram's, they own a ton, probably the largest. They were going to come out with a new mixed drink. And they wanted me to be the creator of it.
Old granddad.
Right, commercially. It involved a tremendous amount of money. Universal would not allow me to do it because they wanted me to do it in costume and makeup, and they laid claim to the fact that they owned that. I don't mean physically owned. The suit is just simply tails, you know. But that creation. And so I didn't, and that was based, legally, was based for them. Some of your listeners may be interested in this trivia. Clayton Moore, who played the Lone Ranger.
Yes.
Clayton In his later years, wasn't doing so well, and so he would appear at county fairs
right.
and small-time rodeos, and he'd ride in on a white horse and wear the mask and so forth. Well, the production company that had bought the rights to the Lone Ranger...
They were making a movie.
...told him that he couldn't do it.
Right.
And he said he could. And they went to court. And the court ruled against Clayton Moore.
Except he can dress the part and wear dark shades.
Well, he tried that. You know? He wore spangles
right.
and everything else. But he couldn't wear the ordinary
yeah.
black right. The court ruled against Clayton Moore. And Universal cited that and said that you cannot do the costume and makeup of Grandpa.
Mm-hmm.
So that incident passed by. 2 years ago, I was called by Pacific Bell, no small agalopoly in and of itself, to do a series of 4 commercials. I never saw the storyboards. I didn't really know what it was. It had to do something with Grandpa, obviously, in a telephone. And my agent got very excited about it, and I said, well, let me first tell you about my past experience, so don't get excited
right.
and don't count your money. And I did, and I suggested that he better fly to California and discuss it with Universal. He did, and they told him the door is that way.
Wow.
He called me. I said, well, the only suggestion I have, since they can both sit down at the same poker game, is why don't you go to Pacific Bell, you know, which is not Eddie's bargain basement.
Right.
And see if they can swing anything. They couldn't. And that was that. About 4 months later, a case cropped up in California. A young lady named, that's not her real name, of course, I'm sure your listeners would know her, Elvira,
mm-hmm.
Stopped doing the show and started to make appearances in costume and makeup that she appeared on TV.
Mm-hmm.
The production company got a cease and desist order, stopped. She sued, and the judge ruled in her favor. So that's where it is.
Those both ways, yeah.
If somebody were to offer me what the Bronfman family offered me, which was $1 million cold cash.
Wow.
You buy a lot of beer with those.
I would sit
yep.
for the 2 hours and put on those tails and tell
yeah.
Universal, screw you, Jack. Screw you, Jack.
Sure.
What about the untapped millions from all those Monsters bubblegum cards? I'm sure you had those, Glenn,
oh.
right? Remember the yeah. bubblegum cards and the lunch boxes and
the
those
lunch box.
Ever so popular Monsters thermoses?
What about all the souvenirs?
Right. Did you get any residuals from
no, it's
your
not,
image?
Not correct. It's in the contract that happened to be a show. Most series don't run into what we call, they call it merchandising. I mean, what can you merchandise?
Yeah.
You know. I mean, Burt Reynolds' hairpiece, Tom Selleck's mustache. What can you merchandise? There's nothing to merchandise. I mean, it really isn't. The Munsters happen to be a quote-unquote freaky kind of a show
yeah.
where, let me see if I can, I'm sure I'm going to leave out things because things have popped up that people have brought to me in the restaurant or I see at trivia and memorabilia shows,
mm.
which are unbelievably enormous. If you've never gone to one, you would not believe what goes on. Let's start off with basically comic books, not just in the English language.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them in Spanish, Japanese, French, comic book, you know, with.
Right.
Okay. The automobiles. Then there were. The dolls. You pulled the string,
right.
and Grandpa talked. Pulled the string, and
yeah.
those things right now, at one of those memorabilia shows, are worth $600.
Wow.
Six, and they're a.
Yeah.
Backwards, it's called stun. Frontwards, it's called nuts.
But who made the money from them when they were out? When they were, you know,
well,
prime.
Well, you get. In a series contract, there is a merchandising clause, and you get a percentage. It never amounts to what you think it is, for one reason. The other fellow is keeping the books.
Right, exactly. Oh, we only sold 3 of these this week, Grandpa.
Yeah.
But you get a merchandising clue. I mean, the figurines, the plates, I mean, just that show lent itself to that kind of merchandising, you know. And the books, people bring them in. Like a Munster kind of dopey Horatio Alger kind of thing.
Yeah.
They ask me to sign the flyleaf, and I haven't seen it in 25 years, you know. People collect these things. Mm-hmm. And rings with the figures in them. I mean, they made every possible thing. They capitalized, they cash in on the show.
Mm-hmm. How many seasons did you run? And what was, 2. You know, what finally, why did the show go off the air? I mean, it's obviously it was popular, or did it take time for it to
I doubt if there is an actor or actress in America who could tell you the reason that their series went off the air. Because that's not a decision you participated. They tell you to come to work on Monday and get the hell out on Friday, and that's it. My guess is, and it's not even a good guess, because I don't really care about that much. Once they tell you don't come back, you don't come back. There's no court of appeal. I think what they did was, since that company pretty much operates on that, is that they threw the figures into the giant $2.5 million computer that they have in the cellar, and they said, we can make more money just rerunning all this junk. Why keep paying these people?
And that goes back to what we were talking about before in the car on the way over.
So, who can estimate what they have made in 23 years of selling it all over the world without making another show?
Right.
Without making another show. I mean, it's amazing. And they did. I mean, there was absolutely no discussion about it. I said, fellas, don't come back to work.
Well, those, you know.
That's it.
Those network executives can never be wrong, that's for sure. more good judgment.
So, are you enjoying yourself, Grandpa?
Is this me? Okay? Yeah, I always do.
Do I rival Howard Stern?
Always do. Young man, if I wasn't enjoying myself, I would move this microphone aside.
And you'd be out of here.
And I'd be gone. Be gone. Because I have done this on high-paying jobs.
Oh, sure.
I'm gone.
It's the only way to be cool, actually.
I'm gone. I have one theory. You may offer me a job. You ain't offering me a career or a life.
Of course.
That's all it is, a job.
I need some advice from Grandpa. My station manager's mad at me. I done something stupid.
You did something stupid? No big deal.
Can't mix me up a magic
California
potion.
No sweat. So what?
No magic
What's
potions
a big deal?
For me, huh? No big deal. I just wanted to bring that up on the air.
You want to apologize?
No. No. Hmm.
Is he an intelligent, tolerant?
Yes.
No.
Man.
No.
Yes.
Yes, he's calm. And
somebody, not I, said no. Let's identify the caller.
That was the general, but the general doesn't know him. I say he is, hey.
Yeah.
I love the man.
So, General, you haven't asked much of Grandpa.
Well, you know, I want you to dance, you know, ever since that.
You guys talk amongst yourself. I'm going to play with some records over here. Prepare something. X-ray, take over, if you would.
Okay. The one question I really wanted to ask you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Two questions. The high point in your life and the low point in your life, aside from visiting the Glenn Jones Show, which could be either the high point or the low point.
I've never had either.
Never had either?
No.
Just
the high point in my life at this moment is being here, whether you believe it or not. And I'm not saying it to...
That's good.
The high point is what I'm doing at the moment.
Live for today. Live for today attitude.
The low point is, I guess, when I'm not doing anything. I don't get involved in thoughts about, gee whiz, why didn't I do that, or... If this and this had only happened to me, and so I would be there instead of he or she or it. I don't.
Yeah, I guess if you spend time thinking about what you missed, then you don't have time to think about what you're doing.
I appreciate what I I don't, you know, I'm not.
Well, it doesn't seem like it makes too much.
No, I'm not prescribing that for anybody else's life. It's worked for mine. Worked for mine. Yeah.
Say.
Are there people listening to this?
Oh, definitely. We're going to take some phone calls.
I'm getting shortly. The feeling that
the phones have been ringing. These people want to talk to you already, but I didn't want to take their phone calls.
Oh,
because I'm
in
control. This is WFMU at Uppsala College in East Orange. I'm Scarface Jones, the coolest guy I know because I got Grandpa on my show. Al Lewis, the infamous Al Lewis. Grandpa's Bellagente on Bleecker Street. Is that how I pronounce it? Bellagente?
Yeah, Bellagente.
Bellagente.
No G. Yeah.
What does it mean? What does it mean?
What does it mean? A very good question. It describes my customers. It means in Italian, beautiful people.
Uh huh.
Oh, well, that's. I'm
whether you believe it or not, I'm a people person. I get high on people. I really do. I'm not, it's like people ask me, what do you prefer? You like California? You like New York? Where do you like to live? And, you know, and it's almost not a question, but a challenge, depending on where I'm at.
Right.
You know, how can you like that other place? Geography doesn't really mean that much to me. You know, a mountain is nice. It's nice. It's nice. It'll be nice tomorrow. It'll outlive me. It'll be there. It's nice. And I groove on people. So doesn't really matter to me, you know.
All right.
What do you say? Play a couple songs and come back and talk to the
Why
audience?
Why not? Yeah, okay. I can't request anything.
Sure you could.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would like to request any songs that you have by a very good friend of mine, John Lennon.
John Lennon, okay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to play.
I'll tell you a story of how I met the Beatles.
Oh, cool.
First time.
Why don't you go with that? Want to go with that?
John Lennon. Sure.
Well, friend finds the record there.
Okay. You don't have a magic
library,
do you?
Yes, we do.
Yeah,
I'll get that one out for you.
Okay.
A couple of songs, then we're gonna talk about John Lennon. Then we're gonna take phone calls.